Super Mario is once again taking to the streets of Tokyo. Nintendo launches a new version of its top-selling Mario Kart franchise. For the first time, it's built for mobile phones. There is a lot riding on it for the Japanese firm. It's suffered a string of lackluster game releases, while many have questioned its strategy on mobile phone gaming.
U.S. fashion retailer Forever 21 has filed for bankruptcy. That adds the company to a growing list of brick-and-mortar brands that have lost out in the competition with e-commerce. Since the start of 2017, more than 20 American retailers, including Sears and Toys R Us, have filed for bankruptcy protection. Their customers are flipping to online retailers like Amazon.
Saudi Arabia is throwing open the door for tourists. Deserts, souks, and relics of the ancient world are among the attractions. A new visa program will make them accessible to people from 49 countries. It is a big change for the kingdom. Until now, access was largely restricted to resident workers, business travelers, and Muslim pilgrims. The Saudi tourism minister says the holiday business is too small a chunk of the economy right now.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's September 30th. It's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day and another business week getting underway here. Lots going on in the world. We'll have an update on the U.S.-China trade talks that are scheduled soon. Some things moving the market, stock markets this morning as well. We'll get to with the market desk coming up shortly. On the program today, a lot of Americans have turned to a new fitness trend, which is indoor climbing, and a Chicago company, a startup company, has taken advantage of that. The CEO of First Ascent Climbing and Fitness will be with us this morning, John Shepherd, the co-founder and business director there now. We'll talk about how it's been to get his company off the ground and running, and how you might be playing a role in that. That'll be up first this morning. A little bit later in the program, a new survey of employers has found that insurance, health insurance, in the U.S. now tops about $20,000 annually. That is a big cost, almost the cost of an economy car every year. We're going to talk a little bit about why this is, why the costs keep going up. John Tozzi will be here, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg, at about 5:38 this morning. He's been writing and reporting extensively about this, and we'll talk about the impact not only to your boss's, your company's pocketbook, but to yours as well, a little bit later in the program. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as futures point to opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 82 points, nearly a third. S&P futures are up nearly a third as well this morning, up about 10 points. NASDAQ futures are up about a half a percent, nearly 42 points. As we look around the rest of the globe, in Europe, a mixed day for markets there. In London, lower by a fraction. In Germany and France, up by about a quarter of a percent each. In Asia, a red day as well on the markets there. The Nikkei is going to end the day down nearly a half a percent. In Tokyo, off nearly 123 points. In Hong Kong, up by nearly 137 points. That's almost a half a percent. And in China, down nearly a percent this morning. The Shanghai off about 26 points, 27 points. And oil in the United States is trading at $55.24 a barrel, down about 67 cents. Couple of big stories as we begin this morning. First, on the U.S.-China trade situation, the government of China says one of its top premiers will be involved in U.S.-Chinese trade talks coming up, a 13-round of talks, that is scheduled to begin in early October. The vice premier of China will be taking part in those talks in Washington, D.C., the government has repeated its position that the two sides should find a solution based on mutual respect and benefit aimed at ending the trade war. On the GM strike front this morning, the GM walkout has entered its 15th day today. Some 46,000 auto workers will continue to picket at GM facilities nationwide. They're upset about billions of dollars in profit that they say GM isn't adequately sharing. Leaders from UAW and GM will return to the bargaining table in Detroit today. If they don't come to an agreement, the auto workers will start receiving $250 a week from the union's strike fund. And the clothing company Forever 21 is filing for bankruptcy. The company is looking to continue operating as it restructures its business. The fashion retailer says it will likely close most of its stores in Asia and Europe, while there are reports that at least 100 U.S. locations could also close. The shopping mall fixture is struggling as shoppers turn toward the internet to buy clothing. Let's begin this morning with a Chicago startup that's capitalizing on a new fitness trend of indoor climbing. The co-founder and business director of First Ascent Climbing and Fitness is with us this morning, John Shepherd. John, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. Thank you.
We're excited to have you in today because I think this story, your story, is about a business that comes from an idea that starts building, and you're right at the bottom floor of that, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, First Ascent is a new company, and we're from Chicago, and we opened our doors at our first location, which is First Ascent Avondale, in 2015.
So talk to us a little bit about First Ascent. Where'd you get the idea? How did you get the idea from paper to the actual gym, the climbing gym?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, there's four co-founders on the team, I being one of them. And my founders are Dan, Joe, Dave, and myself. And I think we each have a little bit different story about how we all came together, but I can give mine. And that is actually Dan and I, my co-founder, were really good friends in college. We actually started climbing as engineers in the when we were in engineering school together. And when we were at the climbing gym, I remember, you know, back in 2003-04, thinking many times like we started going to a climbing gym in Ann Arbor, Michigan called Planet Rock, and we remember talking about it, just having a ton of fun, thinking this would be a fun business to own. So that's kind of the backstory. Years and years later, I came to Chicago to work as an attorney, and I was working at Kirkland & Ellis in their intellectual property group. The day I started my job, I was like, okay, this job is great, but it's going to be stressful. Mm-hmm. I need an outlet. So I got on Google to look for where's the nearest climbing gym, and I saw there was none. Like, there was just really no options in Chicago. There was a few small ones here and there, but they weren't open good hours or they were hard to get to. So I remember I immediately called up Dan and said, you remember how we used to joke about opening a climbing gym? Chicago doesn't have one. What do you think about that? And I remember that conversation, very first one, he was like, let's do it. I'm moving my family there. He was living in New York at the time, and they actually, within a couple months, picked up and moved here, and we lived in an apartment together to work on First Ascent's business plan nights and weekends while we were both working jobs full time. So that's how it started.
So how does the business plan work? You're sitting down and you're working on this business plan. What is the driving factor in moving forward with it?
Well, we both saw the opportunity. And I think the opportunity is that indoor rock climbing is one of the nation's fastest growing sports. It's been proven to be like really popular all in the East and West Coasts. Indoor climbing kind of evolved there first because it was a training mechanism for people who really did outdoor climbing but needed a place to train maybe in the off season or like after work. The Midwest was kind of slower to get indoor climbing gyms, and therefore Chicago represented a great opportunity because, you know, where cities like San Francisco or other cities that like Boston has like 5-6 gyms, mm-hmm. and other West Coast cities have a lot, Chicago just didn't have anything like a modern new large, like really kind of like inspiring indoor climbing gym. So we saw that opportunity, and you asked about writing the business plan. Well, you know, we kind of saw some of the major obstacles were, number one, finding the right real estate. You know, we needed a place where we could build a large 30,000 square foot building with 60 foot tall heights to kind of replicate indoor cliffs. And we also needed a place where we could have parking, needed it to work financially, and then we also needed to find investors. So those were kind of the big obstacles to getting this thing started.
Based on your experience with it, did you sort of just know and have the sense that people would come if you build it? Or were there any kind of surveys involved? How did you kind of gauge interest in this?
So, yes, we had the sense, we had the gut instinct this was going to do great in Chicago. We had both lived in other market cities where, you know, a decade ago, a lot of people were moving back to cities and kind of reinvigorating the urban scene. Millennials and things were all moving back and kind of like relishing and I think all the experiences that cities had. So we knew we had our customer here in Chicago. It wasn't as understood very well by a lot of the potential investors we were approaching. So that took a long time. We met with like people in the real estate world. We met with people in like kind of the institutional investment world. I think one of the big hurdles was in the Midwest, in Chicago in particular, most people hadn't even thought of or even heard of rock climbing. So we'd be talking about it, and people would think, what is this? Is this kind of like an indoor trampoline park for kids' birthdays or something? And, you know, we knew instinctually, this is it's like a fitness gym. It's a membership-based thing. It's something that adults do. It's not just for kids' birthdays. To help people understand that who had never really seen it, that was a challenge. So, yeah, that was something we ran into.
We're sort of in an exciting time where fitness is concerned because, you know, we've been watching over the last week or so Peloton becoming That's a right. public company. People love these new bicycles. There's that part of it. And then you're talking to us today about rock climbing. What is it with these two types of exercise that are drawing people to them?
I think that there's kind of two primary trends that we're seeing. And well, you know, I'm not an industry expert, but mm-hmm. what I can talk about from my experience, we see two trends happening in the fitness industry. One of them is experience. People are, you know, a lot of people still like the traditional gym with just weights and treadmills and stuff like that. I still do that on occasion. But we're seeing the growth of like Barry's Bootcamp or Orange Theory or Peloton, where people are spending a lot of money to have a membership where they're getting like great music and curated workouts and like kind of like really fun instructors and a community vibe where, you know, people kind of all get to work out together in a group. So that experience factor seems to be becoming a really popular thing for fitness people. And we even have a number of members who have multiple memberships. So I think that's a new thing we're seeing is like, you know, it's a lot more easy to be motivated to exercise when you're excited about what you're doing. And I think that, you know, Peloton represents maybe the other wing of growth, which is just fitness being really easy and accessible, mm-hmm. like efficient for people's time. If you have it at home and you have workouts pre-programmed, you don't have to book your class a couple days ahead of time and know exactly when you're going to get to the SoulCycle class if you have Peloton. Mm-hmm. So I think that those are the two things that we see driving it. I think from our perspective with First Ascent, our offering has elements of those, but I think it has even more, and it makes it a little unique. So best way we can describe it, it's easier to describe it if you've seen the inside of a climbing gym or kind of been a part of it. But if you haven't, I'd say that the thing that makes climbing and First Ascent really unique is that we combine, you know, fitness. We're primarily like fitness space business, but then we combine adventure and community and fun with fitness. And I think that's a really unique offering. And I could say it if you'd like, I can say a little bit about what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think I'm on with you, and please continue. It becomes like a social event almost.
Yeah,
in addition to being a fitness event.
Yeah, so I mean, at the most basic level, climbing is obviously fitness. You're using your hands and feet to go from the bottom to the top of the wall. One thing that makes it unique is it's not just the athletic challenge; it's also a mental challenge. So at our gyms, for example, we are changing up our climbing routes themselves. We have kind of modular handholds that we move on around the wall and create new obstacles or routes for people to do, and they're changing every 6 to 8 weeks. So that means every time you come in, there's new routes for people to do, and each of the routes are set up to be kind of a puzzle to figure out. They're not just like a physical challenge of pulling. I think what makes that fun is that the activity of climbing it appeals to people who want the mental challenge and don't just want to run on a treadmill for 30 minutes. And I think that makes it a really unique offering. I mentioned adventure. You know, there aren't that many things you can do in, like, you know, the modern world living in a city that actually make you a little bit scared, but that's in a controlled environment. Mm-hmm. You have a harness on, you know, we have ropes, but you're up 60 feet in the air and you're kind of, you know, a lot of new people get up there and their legs start to shake a little bit and they realize, like, I'm doing something that's kind of scaring me a little bit. That's a really fun experience, especially when it's contributing to pushing yourself and feeling accomplished. That's rare to be combined with something you can do regularly as your fitness. And I think the other aspect I mentioned is community. It's social. Mm-hmm. So the climbing gym is a little different from your average fitness gym where I think, you know, the norm in your average fitness gym is people put on headphones, they get to their weights or their treadmill, and they're just going to work out for an hour or a half hour and then kind of go home and maybe make their smoothie or something like that. At First Ascent, people hang out with each other. It's just way more natural because climbing is social naturally in the sense that you're teaming up with someone, you're both putting on harnesses and a rope, and you're going to like work together on climbs and kind of talk about it. There's another couple hundred people there in a space looking at the same climbs as you, and people kind of just naturally get together and say, hey, did you try that orange climb over there? I thought it was super fun. How did you figure out that part? It it's like you can imagine in kind of like a traditional like gym, people don't usually walk up to strangers and just start talking about, hey, you really lifted that bench press real good. Like, you know, it'd be a little awkward, especially when it's like, you know, male-female interactions or there's some like, you know, you're not quite sure why this person's coming up to me. In the climbing gym, I think it's just kind of the nature of the sport. It's really friendly and people are welcoming and people get together and do it. And that also contributes to the fourth thing I mentioned, which is fun. Climbing is exercise, but it's also adventure and fun. And I think that's also pretty unique. I think, you know, one thing we tell people is it's almost like a really efficient way to spend your time. Like people living in the city have like 45 minute train commute and they're working hard. A lot of our customers are like professionals or parents with kids. Climbing can be the place where you like get your social interaction and you get your exercise and you really have fun. You don't feel like, oh, I just, you know, spent an hour on a treadmill. Now I really want to go like zone out in front of the TV because I've like was just kind of, you know, busting my butt for an hour. You actually are having fun and exercising at the same time. So I think that's what makes it appealing to people.
What about the difficulty nature of it? Somebody's listening out there and they're thinking, okay, I'm sold. I want to go to First Ascent and start climbing. Can somebody just do that? Is there some training that's involved or is there some sort of level of difficulty that you have to get past first?
Climbing is accessible to everybody. And I think that, you know, if you could get your body up a ladder, I think that you could at least try indoor rock climbing. Though we offer climbs that go even way beyond what I could do. We offer climbs up to the professional level of climbing in our gyms. And there are fewer people that do that. But we make a majority of our indoor climbing terrain kind of focused on newer people. So you can imagine in the Midwest, because we don't have outdoor cliffs very near here, most of our people coming in have never really tried climbing before. Mm-hmm. And we tailor a lot of the experience towards the new person. I think that I would say that, you know, you asked about, is there anything you need to know first? Well, we offer classes. So if you come in and you want to rope climb on the tall walls and you want to get up 60 feet in the air, we do have classes to teach you how, we call it our learning the ropes class. So you can kind of learn how to use the harness and use the rope and use the belay device to work with a partner and climb on the ropes. If you want a boulder, boulder is another type of climbing where you're not using that protective gear of the harness and rope, but you're climbing over something kind of like a gymnastics pad, but you're only going up like 15 feet. That has a lot fewer pieces of equipment, but we still offer lessons to get people into that. So we have learning to boulder classes. You could come in and not take a class, and people do that, but I think that people usually have a better experience if they get a little bit of an intro from our staff.
I want to go back to the business part of this a little bit because you have expanded. It's beyond more than just one location now. You're all over the city, it seems. They're popping up. Talk to us a little bit about how that's happened and what kind of challenges that's presented for you.
Sure. We opened our doors at our Avondale gym in September of 2015. We were already working on our second location. It was a little bit of an accident, but our First Ascent Uptown location was the second location on Broadway in the old Borders building. It's a really beautiful old building with kind of like tall windows and a lot of natural light. So the biggest challenge to opening rock climbing gyms is finding the right real estate. We need a spot that we can get up. You know, we need at least 20 feet clear to do bouldering because we need the walls, the padding, and then also to be able to run HVAC and other utilities through the space. And finding that with a reasonable rent, because, you know, we're not traditional retail. We don't pay for the kind of rent that retail pays for, but we also like to be located where people live or where people work. So we want to be convenient for people, but we also need a lot of space because we're building, in an average bouldering gym, 10,000 square feet of climbing. Then we also have, I think, one offering that we always get in our facilities is we also have a full fitness gym with cardio and weights, and we also do yoga classes. So I think that we are looking for a space that can accommodate all those things is a challenge. Like at each of our gyms, we run a full service yoga program with 20 to 30 yoga classes a week. We also have like boot camp morning and evening fitness classes. So we do the full service gym thing, and finding the real estate that can accommodate that can be challenging.
Talk to us a little bit about the price point. Is this a pretty standard monthly subscription, a monthly fee? How competitive is it?
So the monthly fee is $79 a month. So I in terms of how competitive it is, we're not one of the budget gym offerings, but we're also not on the pricier side of, like, you know, the really high-end fitness offerings. I think we fit right about in the middle, which I think is a great place to be, because I think given the large amount of offerings we have, which is, you know, we have, obviously we have the climbing, which is a really cool, unique fitness offering, but then that we can be someone's one-stop shop for fitness, that we also have their cardio and their gym machines and their yoga, I think really makes us a great value offering. I think one thing that makes climbing unique, though, from the standard fitness offering is the standard gym requires a membership. You know, there's an initiation fee and then a monthly recurring or like an annual membership. Climbing is unique in the sense that we are also a destination. So about 60% of our business is membership-based. You know, people that are coming in on average three times a week and staying for 2 hours at the gym and climbing. The other 40% is people that are coming in just because they heard about climbing. Maybe they saw, you know, the Alex Honnold movie Free Solo or something like that, and they just want to go try it because it's becoming more in the public consciousness now. So a big part of our business that we can do that traditional gyms don't is people come in for birthday parties, or we do corporate team building events, or just day passes. So we do both, and people like to come in and just kind of try it. And we actually, that's probably how we get most of our members, is people just hear about it. They come in and they have a great experience and realize, oh, this could be my gym, and there's one near my house, and this is really cool. We really like this scene. I think another thing that makes it unique in that respect is that, you know, I compared us at the very beginning when we were talking about real estate to the fact that some real estate or investors kind of thought, isn't this kind of like an indoor trampoline park or like a water park that kids would go to? I think the thing that really makes us a unique offering is that, yes, kids really do love to climb and hang out. I mean, like, kids walk in and they're just like, whoa, look at those walls. Like, the colors and everything is really inspiring. But parents like to be there too. So I think that kind of distinguishes us from, like, the water park where parents maybe just want to sit there and have a beer while their kids are playing. At the climbing gym, the whole family comes in together and everyone gets to have fun and get their exercise in. So again, it's like another really efficient use of time where mom can come in and take a yoga class, dad can work out, or they can both climb and the kids can climb too. And we have programming for youth. So I think that kind of makes our price point, I think, a really great value offering for people.
A side benefit to the business model that's helped you scout out some of these locations has been, and I'll use the Uptown site as an example of this, an empty building, an empty storefront. We lost the Borders there in that neighborhood. There were a lot of concerns about where's the foot traffic, where's everybody at, nobody's in this neighborhood. You've sort of changed that, and I know the alderman there has been pretty complimentary of a First Ascent for bringing traffic back to that neighborhood, bringing people back in. He's even thinking that this is stopping some crime that might be happening in the area.
I mean, I actually wasn't aware of all those things, but that's great to hear. And we have a great relationship with the alderman because he's been supportive of growing us there and, you know, helping us get signage and things like that when we, you know, as a new business, weren't even sure how to maneuver through all those city processes. You know, you mentioned that, and I think that I mentioned the difficulty of real estate, but I also think that the unique situation we find ourselves in with real estate right now is actually a huge benefit and a huge opportunity for First Ascent. And what I mean by that is that retail is completely changing, you know, in light of all the online, like Amazon kind of changing the way that like retail functions. And even stores that are doing well are kind of downsizing and using less real estate. So I think one of our opportunities moving forward that we are really focused on right now is repositioning real estate that maybe was focused on retail that we can position as an entertainment use to attract people to spaces that maybe weren't very active before. So just like we did with Uptown, we did the same thing in our newest Chicago location in Block 37. There was fourth floor space that had been empty since the building opened, and we took it. And we've completely activated that space and drive 400 to 500 people a day up there to climb. And then they go and they use the restaurants in the surrounding area or in the mall itself. And I think that that is a really cool opportunity for us that we can take these, you know, big retail spaces that are no longer useful for that purpose and really energize them and you know, bring a lot of new traffic.
It's interesting, too, because since you started doing this, I've seen at least one other company start up on this. So there's some competition. People have seen,
right.
Oh, okay, there's a good idea here. I'm going to go in and compete. How is that going?
Well, so in Chicago, we have really one competitor. And I think at this point it's only good for both of us mm-hmm. that we're here. You know, what we've seen is that we're raising the awareness of climbing. And we have customers that climb at both gyms, us like us and our competitor. I actually think that it's only been good for both of us that we're both here. And I think we basically the way our products are distinct is kind of where our locations are. So, you know, if you live in one neighborhood, you're going to use the gym that's close to there, because I think for being being convenient to people, as we've learned, is really important to our customers. So I think that right now climbing is just barely beginning to just start to creep into the public consciousness. I don't know if you are aware of this, but it's actually going to be in the Olympics, and it's going to be Olympics in 2024 as well. So we're only seeing the beginning of, I think, how popular it's going to be. I kind of feel like we're, in a sense, like snowboarding before it really got popular, and now all of a sudden all the kids want to snowboard. Mm-hmm. So I think that climbing will be similar in that it's only going to get more popular, and I think that our competitors here, I think there's room for both of us in the city.
Is that going to impact your pace of growth? Where do you see things in 5 years, 10 years?
I mean, you know, we don't know, because no one's really seen before what a lot of sports that are in the Olympics aren't really commercial businesses, like running, for example, and swimming. A lot of them are just people have them at their high school, so that's how they really identify talent. I think it's going to drive a lot of growth in the climbing industry. Just to use an example, when the Free Solo movie came out, and it actually screened in Chicago, and we actually did with some outdoor brands kind of helped promote the event, and it was sold out, I believe, 4 evenings in a row, which is just nuts. And Alex Honnold, the star of the movie, and Jimmy Chin, the videographer, came in to kind of do a presentation, Q&A, because it was so popular in Chicago. When that happened, we saw a large increase in visits. And we actually said, it's all anecdotal because we weren't collecting data on it, but we met a lot of new people coming in who said, yeah, I saw that movie and I was really interested to come try it myself, or my kids wanted to try it. So if those anecdotes are useful, you know, when it became a little more in the public consciousness, we saw a big boost. I think we'll see the same thing with the Olympics.
So how do you measure growth at the end of the year? How do you measure success? Is it the number of people who are signed up? Is it you're planning another location, or all of the above?
I think we obviously, numbers are important, how many people are climbing. I think, though, that we measure our success by retention. So I think that, you know, we've been building a membership base since we opened, and we have a really high retention rate. And I think our goal is to provide a lot of value for people, and also just a great experience and a great community for people to hang out in. And I think that we're seeing that retain and seeing people hang around and love being a part of that community. We measure success from that. We measure success based on revenue and revenue growth, and we're seeing those things. But I think the thing that's really unique about us is people hang on to their memberships and want to keep being a part of the climbing community. I think we've obviously had our eyes on growth. We've been growing consistently since we opened. We, in the next couple years, are working on a plan to take advantage of that real estate situation I mentioned earlier, which is that I think there's a lot of opportunity to reposition real estate that's not as useful to the, you know, the large brands that are maybe bankrupting or kind of downsizing. And I think that we will measure it successful if we can reposition those spaces and also just make them just as successful as they are here in Chicago. So
are you done with law? Are you going to stay with climbing, or are you going to go back to the law?
I am done working at a law firm. I would never trade that experience back, because I learned so much from being there. But it was a little bit hectic and, mm-hmm. you know, not exactly my passion, but I learned a ton from it. And I actually, you know, loved a lot of it. I wouldn't say I loved every minute of it, but I liked a lot of it. I do legal work for the gym. So I wouldn't say I've given up law completely. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of our leasing and legal work. We have outside counsel, but I'm kind of act as general counsel for the company, and am kind of the manager of our leasing and business expansion projects. So I'm still doing law, and I'm trying to make take best use of it as I can for the company. I think it's unusual in the climbing gym or fitness world to have someone who's an attorney as one of the founders. So I'm, you know, trying to be as useful as I can be with that background.
Well, John, it's wonderful meeting you. All the best to everybody at First Ascent. We look forward to seeing you grow even more.
Steve, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on the show, and thank you for that.
John Shepherd, co-founder and business director at First Ascent Climbing and Fitness. You can find them online at First Ascent Climbing. Locations now in Avondale, Block 37, Humboldt Park, Uptown, Arlington Heights, and Peoria. We're going to continue our conversation with John after the bell this morning and post that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at 720 at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, and good morning. Thank you for being here with us on our Monday edition of the Opening Bell. Our focus now shifts to the business of health insurance. A survey of employers has found the cost of family health care coverage in the U.S. is now at a record high. It's a cost that employers mostly pay, but employers do pay, too. It's having an impact on both. Joining us this morning is John Tozzi, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg, who's been writing and reporting on this story extensively. John, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning.
I want to talk a little bit about this top line number. Talk to us a little bit about the $20,000 mark and why that's a record high now.
Sure. I mean, so that's the average cost of a family health insurance policy. That's a combination of what employers contribute and what employees contribute to their premiums. And it is a record high. I mean, it's pretty much a record high every year when they do the survey. I think most people are familiar that, you know, the cost of health insurance keeps increasing. And importantly, it's increasing faster than workers' wages, faster than inflation, faster than economic growth as a whole. So, you know, you look at healthcare, whether you're a family trying to pay for your premiums or a business trying to provide coverage for your employers, and the increase in costs is just outpacing, you know, the trend lines on kind of most of your other expenses, income, earnings. So it's a growing burden.
Yeah, and you, in your story, talked to the chief executive at Kaiser Family Foundation, and he likened this to making a major vehicle purchase every year.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it is just sort of an eye-popping number. It's the first year in the Kaiser survey that the combined premium for a family plan has topped $20,000. And, you know, what Drew Altman, the CEO of the Kaiser Family Foundation, said to me was that it's like buying a basic economy car, but buying it every single year. And, you know, when you think about just that kind of cost, it's, for many families and for many businesses, it's, it's really stretching what's, stretching beyond what's affordable.
I mentioned that this is, we're talking mostly about workplace covered insurance. So this is the insurance most people get through work. Talk to us about the breakdown of this. What is the portion that employees are paying out of this? What's coming out of our pocketbooks as a part of this $20,000?
Sure. So for an average family health plan, so this is something that a spouse and dependents would also be covered by, employees are contributing about $6,000 to the premium. So, you know, it's important to note that employers are still paying the bulk of this premium. They're paying about $14,000, $15,000 of it. And, you know, that's really compensation that the business or the employer is giving to the employer, the worker, but it's compensation that they're getting not in the form of wages, but in the form of health insurance.
And this doesn't cover the other kinds of out-of-pocket expenses that you might have with healthcare, does it? I'm talking a little bit about medications and other things that are not part of that insurance premium.
Right. So this is the premium for the health plan, which would typically include, you know, medical and drug coverage. But, you know, what we've seen over the past number of years is that increasingly these health policies cover less or they expose workers to more of the cost of their coverage. So, you know, more and more employees have deductibles where they have to pay a certain portion of their medical costs before the health plan kicks in. And if you have, you know, it's quite common now to have a deductible of $1,000 or more. And so that's sort of a layer of risk that employees and their families are exposed to, even after paying, you know, what for many people is an extraordinarily high cost for the premium.
Yeah, and it seems like that's where the potential for danger is here. Not necessarily even the potential, the reality of danger. When we talk about surveys of people in the U.S. not having $400 set aside to cover some unexpected borrowing or something like that, this notion that they might be hit with some sort of medical cost could be destructive.
Yeah, I mean, a survey that the Federal Reserve does every year it sort of asks about emergency savings, and something around 40% of U.S. adults say they can't pay an unexpected $400 expense without either borrowing or selling an asset. So, you know, think about your car breaks down or you have to go for an emergency room visit or, you know, all sorts of just unexpected events that happen all the time. You know, there's a tremendous number of households that just aren't prepared in terms of having savings for that. And then you combine that with health plans that increasingly, you know, in order to lower the premiums or to moderate the increase in the premium cost, they raise deductibles. So, you know, that is, you know, if you're on the hook for $1,000 or $2,000 or sometimes even a $5,000 deductible and you don't have that money in savings, to sort of self-insure, it's not the same as being uninsured, but it's exposing you to a lot of potential financial risk.
I was struck too by part of the story where you talked about types of employees that might be hit hardest by this, and one part of the story where it was employees who were making less than, I believe, $35,000 a year often end up paying more for their health care coverage. Why is that?
Yeah, I think it's $25,000, but this is part of the Kaiser family's analysis where they kind of look at the characteristics of health plans for employers that are predominantly higher wage employers and those that have a greater share of low wage employees. It just makes sense that, you know, think of services businesses with lots of, you know, low wage workers, compensation is, a major cost. They don't necessarily have to offer, gold plated health plans to attract workers. So often those health plans are more expensive to workers. Certainly a big proportion of workers' earnings, they're more expensive because they're just earning less. And I think, you know, the result of that is that a lot of lower wage workers, you know, often can't afford to buy coverage for their families or, you know, in some cases for themselves, even if the employer is offering, offering a policy.
Does the survey talk, and I'm sure you've covered this, but how did we get to this point? What is the reason for this, for all of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's not sort of one simple explanation. I think, you know, this is a trend that's been going on for many years. You know, people talk about, you know, is this the fault of the Affordable Care Act? Well, if you look at the trend lines, it basically, you know, it doesn't shift significantly before or after the Affordable Care Act was passed and implemented. So, you know, what we're really seeing across the U.S. healthcare system is just the costs increasing faster than the economic growth, than earnings, than most other, the rate of increase of most of the rest of the economy. So, you know, that's just there are lots of complicated reasons and theories behind that. What's really driving the cost of health insurance is the underlying cost of medical care, hospital care, physician services, drug prices, so all of that is sort of built into the system and results in rising premiums.
Yeah, and I want to highlight something you just said there. The cost of this, some of this health insurance rising faster than wages for some employees. I know some employers have sort of put the brakes on having their employees pay a little bit bigger share of the cost here. But employers, this is not all employers. It's just some, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're seeing is, we're in a relatively tight labor market. Employers, especially those that have to attract, highly skilled professionals, are kind of rethinking, their strategies. We talked to the CEO of Delta, which announced that they froze employees' contributions to premiums for 2 years. That's certainly, I think, the exception rather than the rule. But what you are seeing in other surveys is that some of the employers are beginning to back away from the high deductible health plans, or at least give workers an option, either kind of a high deductible plan or a more comprehensive, more generous plan with a higher premium. Just in the past couple of years, that some employers have kind of said, let's not just only offer a high deductible. Let's give people some other options again.
John, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
John Tozzi, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg. We'll link out to this story as well, but you can find it at Bloomberg.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures reporting toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are up 62 points, nearly a quarter of a percent on S&P futures as well. The NASDAQ futures up nearly a half a percent. Markets in Europe generally mixed this morning, and in Asia mostly lower. Let's get an update on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We start a new week and move into a new month, the month of October. A lot going on this month as well. And, of course, starting today at Madison, Wisconsin, the Dairy Eyes of the World will be focused on World Dairy Expo, the 53rd year for that event at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. Today, the preliminary activity will be judging contests for intercollegiate and 4-H judging teams. And then tomorrow, the official opening of World Dairy Expo. And they'll attract probably 100,000 visitors from around the world coming to Madison to see the world's finest dairy cattle and to see them judged on the colorful shavings on the Coliseum floor. We ended the week on the market story at the Board of Trade with December wheat up 2¾ cents on Friday, December corn down a half a penny a bushel, and November soybeans down 5½ cents a bushel. We ended the week in livestock futures with the December lean hog contract down 60 cents, but October live cattle gained $2.25 a hundredweight last Friday, and October feeder cattle up $1.60. In addition to the World Dairy Expo, this is the opening of National 4-H Week across the nation. Get out there and support your 4-H'ers who make positive contributions to our way of life every day with their lessons learned in 4-H. And then, of course, the end of October, it's the National FFA Organization Annual Convention and Gathering. That will take place in Indianapolis. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories before we leave you here this morning from the business ticker. Fiat Chrysler neither admits or denies that it inflated sales figures to investors. The auto giant has agreed to pay a $40 million fine to satisfy an order from the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC reports that between 2012 and 2016, Fiat Chrysler maintained two sets of books, one that bragged about fake sales each month and another that reacted to actual sales that was not made public. The misleading sales claims were first discovered in 2016 when two Chrysler dealers sued the company for asking them to falsify sales reports. A Tesla vehicle now has the capability to drive from a parking lot to its driver standing at a curb. Tesla owners have been flooding social media with video demonstrating the new feature called Smart Summon. Tesla says the new technology is part of its 10.0 software update, which is delivered wirelessly. It's available to Tesla owners who paid for the Palo Alto, California company full self-driving capability or enhanced autopilot software package. The average price of gas in the U.S. is up 10 cents a gallon over the last 2 weeks to $2.73. That's largely because of an attack on a key Saudi oil facility earlier this month. These numbers, according to Trilby Lundberg, who publishes the Lundberg Survey, the gas and oil analyst prices are still, on average, about 18 cents lower than they were at this time last year. Charles Evans, who's president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, tells CNBC this morning that he is open-minded about the right level for interest rates in the U.S., but suggests more cuts could be needed if economic headwinds increase. Evans noted that his dovish views on interest rates still includes an upbeat analysis on the fundamentals of the U.S. economy, despite all of the headwinds that the country has been facing, with trade among them, the trade war among them. Evans says he is definitely open-minded about the right level, about what the right level would be for federal funds, for the federal run's target, in order to have the appropriate monetary policy. Right now, though, he says the monetary policy is appropriate. That has been at least pushed recently by Federal Reserve policymakers. CVS Health is the latest to discontinue sales of the popular Zantac heartburn treatment and its own generic ranitide products after traces of a known carcinogen were found on some of the products by the FDA. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, not a lot today. The Chicago Federal, the Chicago PMI numbers will be out. Also today, the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey. Just a few earnings, including Thor Industries and Rave Restaurant Group. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, September the 30th.